fucked up. We just don't know when to get up. We just don't think we can go any further. But we just gotta pull ourselves up, get up out of the mud and think. Tomorrow is a brighter day. It don't matter if today is one of those days you wish you could erase. It's okay. We all have those days. Have those days. Have you ever had a day that was so fucked up? Fucked up. Hey, everybody. This is Jennifer Hill, and welcome to Shattered Illusions podcast. I just want to give you guys a little bit of an update. I'm sure you, if you listened to that song was written when I was having a pretty bad day. And I decided that today would be a great day to play that song and talk about self-care. And I have been having some stuff going on in my life, which has made me have to step back and do some self-care, which is why we have not had the show for a couple of weeks. And I felt that it was important to share that with my audience so that people know that it's okay to take a break and to unplug. And I always want to make sure that I give quality podcasts as opposed to quantity. So I will always make sure that I'm doing a show where I feel prepared and I feel ready for it. So we have changed the name to Shattered Illusions Podcast, and we are also right now looking for another co-host. And tonight we will have a host joining us who is kind of a guest co-host to see how it goes. And his name is Keith. And we also have Lauren Peterson with us. Hello, both of you.
Hello, everybody.
Hi there.
Hello, Jen.
Hello. And we're going to talk a bit about self-care, and we're also going to talk about the difference between self-care and coping, because there's separate things, you know, when it comes to both of those things. And I think the best thing for us is when we're not talking, just on mute, and then we'll come back in. Awesome. So to give you some background information, Lauren is from Peterson Psychotherapy, and she is an expert on a lot of this information, and I always want to make sure you're well informed. And if we have links to any sort of articles that we think would be good for you, we're going to put them up and they'll go across the screen and you can click on those. And if you have any questions for us, you can definitely write them under wherever you're watching us, and someone will send them over to us and we will answer them as soon as we can. Keith, how are you doing here?
I'm doing okay.
Awesome. I'm great. We have Keith here so that he can also bring in another perspective. You know, I am myself and I know what I do to cope. And I wanted to speak with another trauma survivor and have them also, you know, be able to tell me what their coping mechanisms are, because everyone's are different. So, and also he's working out with me and seeing, you know, how we fit together in the show. So let's start off with, as you see, the moon made me do it. My shirt says, I don't know if it's backwards. I don't think it's backwards. I think you could read it. So I'm going to just talk about a little bit about, for me, what I at least know once a month that I do for myself. And if you look in the background, I have my altar set up. It is the day before the full moon. So I already would be setting up my house a little bit at this point and getting ready for the full moon. But for me, it's a time where I can sit and I can really like meditate with myself, light my candles, my incense. Actually, I brought some sage to light for us so that we can, sage our podcast with a little bit of self-care, and really think about the things that I don't want to continue doing and the things that I want to, gravitate towards and the things I want to go away from, which, if you know anything about the moon, that's why you tend to do different things and ask for different things depending on what the cycle of the moon is. It either pulls it away or pushes it towards you. So this is a little bit of my self-care, which I'm going to then ask Lauren if this is a self-care and how this is considered a self-caring act. So you can give us some information on that. as I see.
Yeah, you want me to jump in right now?
Sure.
Okay. So self-care is anything that you do with the intention of calming your body and giving yourself what you need to feel calm and refreshed and grounded and ready to take on tomorrow, right? So there's positive and negative things that people might do that they would consider self-care, but the negative ones are the things that take away the anxiety or the irritability, like in the moment, but then can cause problems later on. So anything that could be potentially harmful to yourself or others would be considered a negative coping skill. So I guess you would want to ask yourself, is what I'm doing right now potentially harmful to myself or somebody else? And if the answer is no, then it's a good coping skill. It's a good self-care strategy.
And it's a positive coping skill. Mm-hmm. So now I'm also thinking about, we have coping skills when it comes to being triggered, especially sure. Talking about the fact that this is, you know, a podcast that's dedicated a lot to trauma and to going through domestic violence and different things like that. Is there a difference in coping and when it's and self-care when it comes to being triggered?
So the strategies are all the same. I think one of the most important things is that self-care and positive coping strategies look different for everybody. And so it's important that we try to not tell people what to do rather than invite them to try a whole bunch of different things and see what works for them individually to help to calm the nervous system. Because what happens when you're triggered is that your nervous system becomes activated and you are unable to use the reasoning and executive functioning portions of your brain. And so in order to get your nervous system to calm down so that you can function better, you've got to implement something that you know is going to help you in that moment. So if we're talking about someone who's just starting to do trauma work and, you know, gets triggered incredibly quickly and goes from zero to 500 incredibly quickly, then we're going to be looking at, you know, introducing practices that people are going to do throughout the day in order to get the nervous system to calm down. Sort of like, so I would prescribe doing deep breathing 5 times a day for 3 minutes in order to get the body to start to experience what it's like to be a little bit calmer. And then once there's a little bit more space in between the person and the trigger, then, and you have time to think, you can say, okay, I'm triggered. I need to go for a walk. Or I need to sit and pray for a half an hour, or I need to go for a swim.
And that would basically, like, doing that repeatedly throughout the day would regulate you in some sort of way so that the next time you were triggered, it wasn't so amplified.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. So you've got your, you've got your as needed self-care strategies. And you've got your daily routine self-care strategies. So the routines are the ones that keep you sort of regulated on a typical day. And then you're going to add on the PRNs throughout the day, depending on your level of stress.
Which for me is why I literally have bottles of smells with me everywhere.
Right.
I mean, you know, and it's something that I'll talk about later because this isn't where I like plug things that I do, but recently I started really getting into scents because it's cathartic and it smells good and it makes me feel comfortable. And I feel like even the scents that I'm picking, I'm always picking things that I think are very comfortable. Like I don't tend to be a person that goes towards flowery or towards, you know, I'm always looking for like, I have no idea, but in my mind, there's some like beautiful, like velvet room that's just like all full of pillows that I can go to somewhere. And like, I don't know where that place is.
This is what it smells like.
And this is what it smells like. Like, yeah. If I could make it smell like that, like, I'm not really sure, but it's amber and it's myrrh and it's like, you know, stuff like that. And I'm not sure if those other smells make me anxious, but it's something like if it's too potent, it doesn't do the same thing for me. It turns me off. And then, you know, it's not the same feeling.
Well, you know, essential oils, have terpenes just like marijuana does. So different oils have different terpenes, which cause different effects.
I did not know that. That's pretty cool because
yeah.
I mean, I know about terpenes only because of I have a medical marijuana card and I like to watch Vice. I like to watch that show Bon Appetit where they like make everything out of weed. And like they talk about the way that they're using things for different medicinal uses. Like, oh, well, I'm doing this because if you have anxiety, but like, I'm like, where can I get into that cabinet? Like, where can I go learn about those things and find it for my own cabinet to like make every day?
Yes. And so like, if you, there are a couple of essential oil companies that are like these pyramid businesses that offer tons of education and access to information about terpenes for each oil. And so they tend to be really great resources, and I'm not trying to plug any one company in particular.
Yeah, but I mean, oils are oils. So it's one of those things. I mean, yes, there's levels of oils, which I have found out from, you know, what I've been researching lately. But yeah, I mean, if the smell is the smell and it's the oil, then it's the oil. So I agree with that. Although I do like to go to Marshall's and try to find oils a lot cheaper.
Right.
because that's just how I roll with a lot of things. And like, you know, I was like, oh wow, this is like only $4, but you know, it all depends on quality too. But I feel like
you got to be careful because they put a lot of additives, right? So the $4 bottle of lavender versus the $30 bottle of lavender is the same size, right? It's 15 milliliters, but the $4 bottle of lavender is probably mostly coconut oil.
Yeah. Yes. And actually, that funny thing is, that's why I actually chose not even to use coconut oil in my mixing. So, but that's a talk for another day. So Keith, why don't you come in here and I will give you some space to talk. I know we lost you for a second there and you're back in, and give us some perspective, you know, on what you do for your self-care.
Okay. So, let me go on the meditation part of it. I know she was talking about, dealing with the impulsiveness. So I did a little research and yeah, there are certain parts of the brain that are affected, you know, while you're doing meditation. In the brain, there's gray matter density. This helps with your emotional regulation and your reaction to fights. And, you know, that's a big thing that, you know, like the impulsiveness just leads to a lot of fighting. So meditation can, like, you know, self-heal you in this sense. Other stuff is, personally, I, you know, choose exercise, which is self-healing. And a lot of men will choose this instead of, like, you know, they're kind of timid to use yoga and meditation. I mean, some do, some don't. I know a lot of my personal friends don't. They would rather exercise. So, personally, I have been a martial artist for like 5 years here and there. And, jiu-jitsu, Wing Chun, Kung Fu, there is, you know, a lot of people just think that this is fighting and violent. It's not. You know, there's a lot of things that you do to prepare you to become a good fighter. And that, you know, there's forms and a lot of different self-healing, kind of like meditation almost, you know, in a sense, you know, like I go through my forms before I even practice doing martial arts. A lot of women do cardio kickboxing. There's preparation before that. And, you know, to me, that's self-healing for myself. I do meditation as well. You know, I'll just come home, listen to Zen music for quite some time if I can, you know, if nobody bothers me in the meantime. But most likely I get a call from someone or something. Like, it's hard to do it when you're interrupted, you know. You got to have that space so that you can meditate and make yourself feel better, you know. Like, it's just important to make yourself feel better when you've been abused or in, you know, like you've just had a rough day. Like, it's a stress healer for me. I know I get tons of tension in my neck. I'm seeing a massage therapist right now for that. You know, just, you have to do something and not just stay all balled up and let everything tighten up in your body. You know, like, you have to take care of your body as well as your mind.
Yeah. Can I piggyback on that a little bit, Keith? My husband is a longtime old school athlete, and for many, many years said to me, I can't meditate. I don't want to meditate. I just want to go for a run. I just want to go ride my bike. That's meditation for me. And that's, I think, really important is that there's this idea that meditation means you have to like sit still and breathe in silence for a period of time, which is really not the case at all. Meditation is anything that you can do that stills your mind.
Yeah. Like, I feel like lately my meditation is counting drops. Like, I know that sounds weird, but
yeah.
I'm creating these smells and they have to have a certain number of drops in each one of the bottles in order for the smell to come out right in every single bottle. So I literally have to count every drop of everything that I put in. And it's something satisfying about when I put all of the bottles up and I go through and I count each one individually and go through it, because I can't think of anything else. Because really, if I do, I'm going to mess it up. And then, you know, like, yes. So yes. It's been, you know, besides reading, I read so much. I feel like for reading, I mean, I don't know if for other people, but it gets me out of whatever moment I'm in, because if I have to read words, then I can't really concentrate on like the other things that are happening to me.
Yeah, right. When you read words, and also if you're like a novel reader, it takes you to a different world. You know, I've heard from some people that reading has actually for them in the past been a dissociative episode or a means by which they dissociate. And so as they're going on their healing journey, they've chosen to not read because they don't want to associate that with this old trauma coping mechanism that was developed. And so yeah. part of treatment can be, you know, reincorporating reading for people in a very intentional way.
That's interesting. I mean, I know that as a kid, I used to read so much that I wouldn't, like, I'd have to ask people, like, did that happen? Or did I read that?
Mm.
Like, and I mean, I used to read so much and didn't really think of it. And then I stopped reading for a really long time. Like, I did for maybe like a decade. And that was when all of the stuff was going on. But it also was because every time I read, I was taking a tension away from that person, and he would literally like knock the book out of my hand, be like, I didn't come here on vacation with you to watch you read. I didn't take you here to watch you read. Like, so yes. My thing that calmed me down was now like every time I pulled out a book, it was like punched out of my hand. So I kind of
it became associated with trauma.
Yeah. And now it's like, the other day, Bob was going to take a picture of me because I've read so many books this summer that they're taller than me when you stand them on top of each other. And I mean, and then when I look at what I've been reading, I mean, I read Lakota Woman. I read all about, like, you know, the Native American women and the different things that they went through. I pretty much read about every single woman's plight in every different sort of country and experience. And I don't even know how I gravitated, well, I guess I do, towards those books. But like, I read about every single thing I think that I could have read that a woman went through and got through historically. Like, I even just finished reading the book about Henrietta Sells, about the Hela Sells, and like about what her family went through, you know, and just, it's just crazy because I just feel this thing where I guess it's healing to me to read about women who went through something crazy and got through it.
Right. It's absolutely, it can be incredibly healing to experience something, whether it's a book or a support group or conversations with other survivors, that makes you realize that you're not alone.
Which is
and
a huge
also,
part.
Yeah, and also not crazy.
Yeah, because that's the label that everyone has given you and you've listened to it for so long. I mean, you know, of course you're crazy because you're the one that jumped off the handle after somebody like kept poking you and abusing you and doing things to you for like months. And then you finally like flip out in some sort of like way that they could be like, oh, see, told you that person's crazy. So yeah, it's interesting. Even with music, I stopped listening to music for quite a long time. And I'm a musician. And it was just too much trauma associated with music that I had to look at it. And if it was between 2002 to 2009, I didn't listen to it. Same thing with movies. I wouldn't watch movies either. So it is. I feel like it takes away some of your coping mechanisms because music is what saved my life in the first place. And music is why I'm here. So to take music away from me, take reading away from me, is to isolate me even more. Right? Crazy how it all comes together.
Yeah, it really is.
And I mean more ironically, not crazy. So I see Keith's back.
I'm looking at a post from Facebook. Jeff is asking if we've got anything for horrible self-esteem.
Well, what do you think about that? What can you answer that for him? I don't know how much Jeff wants to get into stuff, but he's a friend of mine.
Okay.
And I know he's been struggling a little bit.
So in terms of like what I might recommend to help build self-esteem is to ask a person, what are the things that they're interested in? What are the things that you're interested in that you enjoy doing? And I would say, start doing more of those things and build your confidence in those things and build your skill level in those things. Because when you build your confidence and your skill, you start to feel a little bit more happy with yourself. And so if there's really nothing, then I would say to start experimenting with some different hobbies that are sort of low risk for you. Maybe watch some YouTube videos and learn how to crochet. Start cycling or strap on a pair of sneakers and go for a walk and take your phone with you and start taking some photographs and sharing your photographs on your social media. And as you start to engage in these things and you start getting feedback from people that's positive, your self-esteem starts to rise. Also, I would say get rid of toxic people if it's possible. Toxic people are doing their best to keep your self-esteem in the toilet because it helps them to feel better about themselves.
I actually have a question for both of you. You don't mind me interrupting.
No.
So it's kind of a, you know, we all know once you've been abused, you get nightmares, anxiety, depression, feelings of low self-worth. So I don't know about you two. I know I still have dreams and a lot of my past abusers are in them. So I try to figure out why they still pop up in my dreams, even though I'm still on a path of like healing. Then I question myself why, you know, when I have a good relationship now, do these dreams still occur? And, you know, then I kind of feel weird about having these dreams, you know, like So how can I self-heal from that? Because it kind of puts you back in a place you don't want to be once you have these dreams. You're like, wow, am I still having these dreams after like 3 years? You know what I mean? So I don't know if you guys have any feedback on that.
I mean, I can just give you from experience, and then maybe Lauren can give you from, you know, her advice side. But I mean, I still have nightmares, and my nightmares, I'm usually trapped in the house with that person, and I'm telling people that it's danger, and no one's believing me because that person always made themselves look different to everyone else. So I'm like begging with people, like, will you please help me? Will you please help me? And they won't. And so for a long time, I made myself stop dreaming, and that was not good for me at all. And I think that led to even more problems. So I started realizing that if I just kind of like go through the dream and I try to, I don't know if you know about like lucid dreaming, or like if you can get into a state where you know you're dreaming and you can try to like tell yourself that, like I try to tell myself in it, like, this isn't real. Like, this is totally not real. And you're going to come out of it. And it's, but it took me a long time to be able to give myself that sort of dreaming. And I also for a long time didn't feel like I knew where my home was either, because like my home had been like ripped apart from me. And even with my husband, like I'd wake up and wouldn't even know where I was sometimes. And since then, because we talked about everything, like, and I know that he's kind of my home, like he's where I'm home. I don't know. It's kind of fixed some things for me in those aspects. And I don't have those dreams as much, because maybe I've kind of like staked my claim even in my dream. But I don't know. That's all I can right. say is my experience is that.
Yeah. I was thinking that like maybe yoga might be a form, you know, like I was reading about, I guess a Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, hard for me to say, but he says that, yeah. That yoga provides mastering and regaining ownership over your own bodies, which I feel that kind of ties into those dreams that you have to rebuild a safety wall. And then, you know, a lot of the times you have to rebuild what you think is lost or robbed. And it's like almost having those dreams, you feel like you're losing yourself again, and that you need to regain some sort of you know, just help with your own body. Like, these dreams just kind of feel like I'm being grabbed of my healing, well, in some sense. You know what I mean?
Don't you think those are the signals for self-care though? That's like when all of a sudden it's like, bah, 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 you need to do some self-care. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's what it is for me. Yeah. Like I'll wake up and be like, whoa, okay. Like what the heck did I do to overexert myself? Why did I give too many people all of my energy this week? Why did I let this person take advantage of me this week? Why is this going on? And usually it's a red flag telling me to chill out and that I need some self-care.
Yeah, it's super important to know about yourself. What are the things that deplete you and what are the things that refill you? Because you can plan ahead a little bit. So it sounds, Keith, by what you described, that you might consider looking into PTSD. You might have PTSD. Some of the symptoms that you described are consistent with PTSD, which is an entirely reasonable experience for having been in abusive relationships. And, you know, because I'm a trauma therapist, I utilize and I have different modalities for helping people heal from past trauma, whether they have PTSD or they have CPTSD or they have experienced something traumatic without the full diagnosis, things that help to reroute the pathways in your brain are very good. And yes, yoga is one of those things. And Bessel van der Kolk is a great resource. And reading his book, The Body Keeps the Score, can be incredibly enlightening and also can be incredibly triggering. So just keep an eye out for that.
Well, you just reminded me while you were talking about that, but one of the things that's worked for me the best is EMDR therapy, which we really haven't talked about. I feel like for me, that is part of my self-care sometimes, but it's because I was able to purchase those wrist bands that you told me about. So instead of having to like always worry about like, I need to go and get EMDR therapy right now, when sometimes it happens, like when I'm triggered and I need to chill myself out, I carry them with me and I just stick them on. So maybe you could tell a little bit. I have a lot of friends, actually a lot of people that ask me what EMDR therapy is. And I try to explain that to them, that it kind of like tries to like erase things from being so like pulled into focus and like sort of blurs them in a way, like tries to like, you know what I mean? Not make it so acute so that you can deal with the triggers less and less, but I don't really know how exactly it works.
Yeah. You want me to share a little bit about that right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that maybe that's something that might help Keith. Sure. I mean, you know, through that.
So EMDR is an acronym that stands for eye movement reprocessing and desensitization. Or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR. And so when it was first discovered, Francine Shapiro noticed that she felt less activated when she was looking back and forth from left to right, left to right, and thinking about something upsetting. So this is what started her on her journey of researching EMDR. And so despite the fact that the name is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, any sort of bilateral stimulation does the trick, which is why those wristbands work for you. So
they're like almost like little pulses.
Yep. And they alternate. Those are made to alternate back and forth. And so when you're doing EMDR therapy, you're activating your visual cortex, you're activating a memory, an emotion, you're activating where it is in your body that you feel it. So you're activating a fully sensory laden experience of your trauma or of a memory that in combination with the bilateral stimulation actually reroutes neural pathways in your brain or creates new neural pathways in your brain. So you have a memory and it's not deleting the memory. You have a memory that's got a freeway associated with it to an emotion or a fight, flight, fear response. Fight, flight, freeze.
I mean,
freeze.
I do have unit. So, I mean, I've kind of like when I come home, I use that. That actually stimulates different parts of my body. I don't know if it's similar, you know, I tell a lot of guys at work about that.
What is it? I think we missed that part.
A TENS unit, you know, it's like the electric shock. You know, you can do tapping, you can do acupuncture. There's the particular one I have has many different, you know, stimulating, tapping, cupping. So I kind of suggest that all the time to a lot of guys at work that suffer from stress and, you know, they're going through a lot of the same things that I am. You can just put them on anywhere on your body and just, you know, stimulate wherever, as long as you're not turning it up really high, because you can hurt yourself. So I will recommend to start low if you do buy one.
Yeah, you're supposed to stay away from your heart as well. You're supposed to stay away from your heart area.
Right. Yeah. The TENS is a good, more affordable.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's super affordable. What I would suggest that you do when you're using it is use the two pads, right? Or four pads, and put two of them on one side of your body, two of them on the other side of your body, so that you can sync it so that they're buzzing in an alternating way. And that would be that would be just the last little tweak. And as far as sensation, it's a little bit different than what Jen's talking about. The tens are kind of like an electric, a very mild electric pulse, whereas the wristbands are literally a gentle vibration.
Okay.
Yeah, and they go in different speeds and stuff depending on, like it says, you know, depending on what you're going through. But those really helped because during COVID for the first, I mean, we haven't seen each other for a long time, but in the beginning we couldn't see each other at all. And I really needed EMDR therapy. And she suggested those. They were kind of expensive, but I needed to get something to chill me out. So, and now like I've driven to New York and been in the middle of like awful, awful traffic where people are literally trying to kill me every second. I pull them out, stick them on. And I'm like, all right. It's like, I'm Superwoman. I'm like, now I'm going to,
I can do this.
I'm like, I will get home.
Yeah, right. Nice. I mean, and you have car accident trauma, so
yeah,
it's extra,
I know,
extra.
And it's funny because I forget about that because it feels like the other traumas are so big, but I literally went through a windshield and flew out onto the ground. So like, to me, that's like, I don't feel like it gets much more traumatic when you think of a car accident. So yeah, when it's slippery out, I notice that I'm like gripping and I'm like, cause that night it was slippery. It was a van. We were only going like 35 miles an hour and we flipped 3 times. So for me, it's definitely a reminder. So I have to unclench. I have to unclench my face cause I always feel my face is clenched and just relax. And being a singer, that's a big thing because I already put my mouth in certain situations, like so that I can sing correctly. But then I'm used to always having permigrin when I talk to people, which is like always got my face engaged, which leads to, you know, with my TMJ and stuff like that. So I'm always trying to remind myself to relax, and those bracelets help me a lot. So that's part of my self-care.
They're definitely good self-care. I get a massage, a 90-minute massage every month as part of my self-care.
Well, and what about the stuff you make, like the rocks and stuff?
Yeah, I do a lot with crystals. I do, you know, many of my self-care strategies are in the creative department. So I paint rocks with inspirational things on them. I do beading. I play with oils also, with essential oils, and mix and match and diffuse and fun stuff like that. I have several animals, 4 dogs and 3 cats, who are all super chill and have great calming energy.
Yes, they do. And it's, you know, I mean, for me, that's why whenever I talk to people, I'm like, well, you have to understand, like, it takes you a long time sometimes to find someone you're comfortable with. And for me to find someone that is giving me coping skills that literally I can be like, oh, you need me to go get, you know, a crystal and sit here and be quiet. Like, I can do that because it's something that I already, you know, do. So I appreciate that within our therapy and my dog. Mm-hmm. Like, my dog is my therapy dog.
Yes.
And, you know, when I'm at a session and your dog is sitting at my feet, it's much more calming than, you know, if you're just sitting by yourself, you've got this nice comfy dog with you. So
yes,
absolutely. There's a lot of nice coping mechanisms, cause that's bad. Right. But you know what I mean?
No, coping mechanisms are okay. As long as they're not causing harm.
As long as they're not bad. Yeah. Yeah. So, but for me, that's good because those are the kinds of things that I need. And I think smells is definitely, I don't know, it used to be a trigger for me. There are still smells that are definitely triggers because I always smell and hear and feel things so deeply that I definitely, like, there are certain things, like, I'll be like, ugh, that guy's wearing Old Spice. Don't let him stand near me. But yeah. Besides that, you know, and then I just whip out my oil, stick it under my nose, and I'm like, I don't smell that person anymore.
Right.
And then I can continue. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a positive coping strategy. Like, you carry it in your pocket or in your purse or whatever. So it is there when you need to change the smell of the environment or to intentionally, like, give yourself a dose of something calming or soothing. Or opposites, if you're sort of like starting to dissociate a little bit, then there are these like lime packets that you can get on Amazon, toss that in your mouth, and that pops you out of a dissociation very quickly.
Are they super sour? Like,
yes,
it's making my mouth water.
Yeah, it's literally dehydrated lime or lemon juice.
Oh God. Yeah. Although that might work with some tequila if you're in a pinch. Just put a little bit right here.
So I know my go-to is the weekends when you get a free moment. I like to just go for a drive. I know I find myself going for a drive to it's more of a visual soothing for me, just to see nature. Like, I drive to dams, I drive to places that are just like beautiful, you know, to look at. Nature is kind of like a self-healing for me, you know, and when I get a chance, I'll just say, hey, let's go take a drive, and not even know where I'm going, you know, just find a place, point and go. You know, and it works for me.
Yeah, that's great. I was just telling somebody earlier today, I had a session and I suggested that they take videos of nature in places that they go to that they find serene, so that you have these videos, these 3 to 5 minute video clips saved on your phone that you can then use to view to help to calm you down, to calm your nervous system down. It takes you back to that moment of serenity.
Awesome. Yeah. And I also like on, Alexa or Siri, whatever you have on your TV, that you can actually just ask her for cricket noises or waves, you know, and like that will just come up, Zen music, anything like that. So you can just pretty much stream nature. Like right now I can hear crickets outside and it's kind of soothing to me.
Yeah.
I feel like I hear them too, but I don't think so. They're not in my backyard right now. It's probably just coming through the airways for me.
I was going to say, they're pretty loud around here, so you could be picking it up from my mic.
Yeah.
Sorry, Keith.
Yeah, sounds certain like people, though, it doesn't work for them, you know? Like, I mean, crickets kind of freak people out sometimes, too. Just, you know, you have to find your sound that soothes yourself.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And like I said earlier, self-soothing and self-care looks different for everybody. And, you know, there are some gurus of spiritual healing who will say you have to do exactly this, exactly this, exactly this. And that's just simply not the case, because everybody's bodies are different. Everybody has had different experiences in their lives, and some things are soothing or calming while other things absolutely are not.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm definitely not a quiet meditation person. My brain goes too much. So I have to do something like count drops or like, I don't know, bead. I like to bead. I like to do the same kind of stuff that you like to do. I like to wire wrap and just stuff that I have to pay attention to so that I don't mess it up kind of thing. I like to do macrame, but then I have to count how many things that I did if I want to do a certain pattern. So it's weird. Counting comes in with a lot, because then I can't think of anything else.
So it's interesting that you say that, Jen, because counting is actually rhythmic. And anything that's rhythmic is soothing, because it helps us to connect with our hearts, which are rhythmic, and also the experience in utero is incredibly rhythmic.
Oh yeah, that's true. I mean, you're hearing a heartbeat all time, the time.
Yep.
That's interesting. Well, I think that we should wrap it up. We're you know, we're getting close to 9 o'clock and I don't see any more questions, but if anybody has anything else, you know, left to talk about, I just think that everyone should know and get from this that, like we've said, self-care looks different for everyone. And as long as you're not doing something that's harming yourself or others, it is a self-caring or coping sort of practice for yourself. And that it doesn't really matter what it is that you like to do. And if you don't want to do things alone, you can like look up groups and stuff and things on Facebook. Like if, I mean, I know some people like to go and you can't find out where anything is. You have to like learn coordinates, but you can go and like look at haunted houses in the woods. You could take pictures of abandoned places and you can find people, you know, that you could connect with that know nothing about the rest of your life, which I think also makes it a lot easier, you know, to just get out, play frisbee golf with someone, you know, do something, put yourself out of your comfort zone if you can, if that's okay for you. Because I find when I hang out with someone who knows nothing about the rest of my life and we're just focusing on a task and we have a lot of fun together because there's none of that like extra stuff I have to worry about. So for me, that's another thing is going out and meeting new people is self-care for me as well. So that's my take on it for tonight. And I hope that some people got some good information. I hope, Jeff, that you got some good information. And if you have any more questions for us, you can send it as a DM to the Shattered Illusions message inbox. And we will continue to answer questions like as we come back on. So if there's something you want to know about, we'll address it in the next show. And if there's any resources that anyone needs, feel free to please reach out. We have a couple links that have to do with what Lauren was talking about, coping versus, you know, bad coping skills. What are the differences between that and self-care, which he just put up right now from Medium. And we put some up for 50 simple self-care ideas for a bad day, and also put up men's health, permission to take care of yourselves, permission to self-care. You know, unfortunately we've lived in a very, a society where to be a man is to not show any emotion, and that's not really self-care. So give yourself permission. And that's my,
definitely.
That's our podcast for today.
Have you ever had a day that was just fucked up? Where everything you did just fucking sucked? From the moment that you got up, the world was acting like you were drunk.